Call to order, opening statement pursuant to New Jersey Administrative Code, Title 10, Chapter 4, Subchapter 10. Notice that this meeting has been provided by publication in the Asbury Park Press and the Co-Star and posted in the Borough Hall of Manasquan and in the schools within the time limits prescribed by law. Would you please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance? And I believe there's a flag back right hand for, oh, thank you. I pledge allegiance
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, Mrs. Hahn.
Mrs. Barnes.
Yes.
Mr. Bauer.
Yes.
Mr. Campbell.
Yes.
Mr. Clayton. Mrs. Degens Fang. Mrs. DePalma.
Yes.
Mr. Fury. Mrs. LaSalla.
Here.
Mr. Shelton.
Yes.
Mrs. Birdie.
Here.
Mrs. Walsh.
Here.
Mr. Winterstelle.
Here.
Okay, we have a quorum.
Okay, just a bit of housekeeping. Mrs. Degens Fang couldn't be with us tonight, let the minutes reflect due to a family commitment. She's unable to attend. Mission statement, Manasquan School District's mission is to empower students to reach their potential and become lifelong learners. We strive to ensure that students play an active role in their education, are guided by rigorous academic standards, aligned to the New Jersey core curriculum content standards, and function within a community that regards students, educators, and parents as full participants in the educational process. We develop a learning environment that nurtures growth, personal integrity, and mutual respect. Statement to the public, oftentimes it may appear to members of our audience that the Board of Education takes action with very little comment, and in many cases by unanimous vote. Before a matter is placed on the agenda at a public meeting, the administration has thoroughly reviewed the matter with the superintendent of schools. If the superintendent of schools is satisfied that the matter is ready to be presented to the Board of Education, it is then referred to the appropriate board committee. The members of the board committee work with the administration and the superintendent of schools to assure that the members fully understand the matter. When the committee is satisfied with the matter, it is presented to the Board of Education for discussion before any final action is taken. Only then is it placed on the agenda for action at a public meeting. In rare instances, matters are presented to the Board of Education for discussion at the same meeting, and final action may be taken. I just have a couple of items before we get started. This is John Winterstelle's final meeting with us. He's completed his term on behalf of the Board of Education. John, I'd like to thank you for your commitment to our students in the district, and I think I can say that we all wish you nothing but the best. And thank you very much.
I wish you all the best. Thank you.
Also, just to give the board a brief update, on Friday, December 14th, I had the opportunity to meet with three representatives from the Randolph Township School District, one from the Board of Education, one from their Education Association, and one from the PTO. Mrs. Hahn, members of the custodial staff, Mrs. Sanders, Mr. Kirk, MES staff, some of the high school staff were all in hand to receive donations of toys, gift cards totaling somewhere in the neighborhood of approximately $14,000 to be distributed to our students who were affected by Hurricane Sandy. And it's my understanding that they're not done, Peg, if that's correct.
That's correct.
Seeing firsthand, you know, how our town was affected, I asked Mr. Shelton to give these ladies a tour of the beachfront. We drove them around, so they really got to see the impact that some of our families and what they're dealing with and how hard our town is working to come back to restore ourselves. We then had the opportunity to ask them to be our guests, to go over to the high school for the Life is Good Assembly. And I have to tell you that they were most impressed with what they saw there as well. So a thank you to our staff. I'm asking that the secretaries in our board office, I asked Mr. Mahan if we could draft a letter from our board to theirs to thank them for their generosity. So, okay, now on to tonight's business. Acceptance of the minutes. May I have a motion to accept the minutes, 12-18-01? May I have a motion?
Motion.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Second?
Second.
Thank you, Mrs. Walsh. Any discussion? Roll call.
Mrs. Barnes.
Yes.
Mr. Bauer.
Yes.
Mr. Campbell.
Yes.
Mr. Clayton. Mrs. DePalma.
Yes.
Mrs. LaSalla.
Yes.
Mr. Shelton.
Yes.
Mrs. Verdi.
I'm abstaining from October 9th, and yes to the rest.
Mrs. Walsh.
Yes.
Mr. Winterstelle.
Yes.
Motion carried.
Okay, we're just going to move for the presentations.
Yes.
And you can introduce them. If we could just have the head table move over to the presentations that we have.
Our presentation this evening features the high school. We've asked the high school staff and administrative staff to give us an update on the high school testing program and also to give us an idea about the high school program as it's progressing this year, and also some ideas perhaps as to what's going to be happening next year. Mr. Capola?
Good evening, everyone. I wanted to thank you for having us. Usually we have this presentation in September or October, but because of some one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about was our presentation of the test scores. Tonight, we're going to be presenting our HESPA scores, our end-of-course biology scores, our advanced placement scores, and our SAT scores. We want to do two things tonight. The first thing that we want to do is we're going to talk about how, well, first I want to get this on. So, but the first thing we want to do is we want to talk about how these test scores are indicators and about the high expectations and the great student achievement that we have in our classrooms every day. The second thing that we want to do is we want to talk about how those achievements lead us into what our vision is. And our vision as a high school staff is to become not just competitive, but the most challenging, one of the most challenging high schools in the county and in our district faculty. And I think through the information that you see this evening, you can see that we're making strides in all those areas. So, once we get the presentation, we're ready to go.
Oh man, she just ruined that whole
thing
there.
Call on Jesse.
You were looking forward to
that. I know I was.
I think when that comes on.
Oh, there it is.
There we go.
Okay, this is our test report for 2012-2013. Features our scores from the 2011-2012. First test we'd like to take a look at is our is the HESPA. The HESPA is a test that all high school juniors take in language arts and in math. And just to start with language arts, what you can see from 2010 to 2012 is obviously our passing rate is very high, almost 95% this year. Our passing rate would be students that score in the proficient or advanced proficient range. To give you a little bit of a historical perspective, going back to 2007, our advanced proficient rate was just about 15% of language arts. We've since gotten up to 36 and 26% in the last 2 years. So we're very, obviously very proud of those scores. To go ahead to the next slide, what you can see is where we compare in our district factor group. The district factor group is made up of schools in the same socioeconomic categories that we're in, schools locally like Wall, Freehold Borough, Allentown. And what you can see is we fall right in line with our district factor group in terms of overall passing rate and our advanced proficient scores. So we're very, obviously very pleased with where we are. What this can tell us about the about our English program is a couple of things. First of all, our curriculum is updated to reflect the new core content standards. That's important because obviously the core content standards are designed to prepare our students for 21st century and the 21st century workplace. We've infused more informational text. It's a key part because the informational text, we're raising the reading level of all our students. We're not just doing this in our English classes, we're doing it across the board in all our classes. So the informational text and the ability to synthesize and to apply material is really important in getting students to think critically and get to that next level. One of the changes that we made this year, the commitments we made with our master schedule, created a workshop for ninth graders who experienced difficulty with their eighth grade NJAS scores. So students who come from eighth grade who did not score well in the NJAS, when we bring them in, along with their regular English class, we provide remediation for them. We provide very specific writing and reading tasks to not only prepare them to pass the HESPA, but to also have them successful in their in their regular coursework. Obviously, our collaboration with Massillon Elementary School, ensure that curricula are aligned to each grade level. We've also had a lot of success in articulating with our Senate District. Senate District superintendents and boards have been very cooperative in setting up time to articulate and make sure that we're all expecting the same thing from our students. And also, overall supervision, I'm actually presenting right now for Barbara Kerensky, who couldn't be here this evening. But Barbara is one of our supervisors, is an outstanding supervisor. And in working with our teachers, what she has done is, again, talk about curriculum, instruction, and we collaborate together to obviously raise the level for our kids so they can achieve at the highest levels. Okay, and Mr. Muren, I'm going to go over our math scores. everybody doing tonight? I'm Mr. Muir, and I'm the supervisor of the math department as well, the business department, equally proud of both. And these are our scores, and you can see over the last couple years that we've done really well. We really prided ourselves last year on getting below 10% on the partially proficient. So we were a little disappointed when the number went back up to 12%. And the reality of it is when I did the numbers myself, we got 9%. And I'm pretty good at math now, so I was wondering what the problem was, and so I reached out to Mr. Coppola, and we looked at the Cycle 2 reports. And what it actually was this year is we had kind of an unusual circumstance in that the number of students that were placed out of district this year was pretty high. In the past, it's been pretty negligible. It hasn't really affected our results. But this year, we have 10 out-of-district students who don't have an opportunity to come to Manasquan, and therefore, we don't have an opportunity to provide them the kind of instruction that we're providing the rest of our students. And when we took those students out, the passing rate or the partial proficient rate is actually 9%. So you can see that 3 percentage points is pretty high for just the 10 students that are out of district. So, you know, while it's 12% and that represents our whole district, it's really not an accurate picture of what we're doing in Manasquan inside this building. And as you can see, we've been really, again, with the advanced proficient number Mr. Coppola spoke about, where we were several years ago with the language arts. Several years ago, we were at 16% for advanced proficient. And so in the last 5 years, we've doubled the number of students that are advanced proficient. And we kind of want to see ourselves with at least one-third of our students always meeting this advanced proficient. Once we can do that for a couple years, I think we can even move beyond that. So we're proud of that number again. And I'm proud of this slide because I'm done with it, so we're going to move forward to the next one. And this compares us again to the DFG. Mr. Coppola explained to you guys who we're talking about there. We crushed the state. We're a little bit ahead in the partially proficient area, so we have less students that are not meeting the passing rate, and our advanced proficient is right in line as well. So again, a pretty good job there. I think I'm on to the next one as well. So, doing a good job. All right, so these are a couple of things that we do directly to help our students to have the best opportunity to pass the HESPA. Again, it's a graduation requirement, so kids can't get out of high school, can't get a diploma unless they pass the math and the English part. So each year, every junior class, which is either pre-calc, integrated math, or Algebra 2, for the 4 weeks at the end of the first semester and the 4 weeks beginning the second semester leading into the HESPA, we do a daily review. We cover topics that may not be in our in the content of the classes, but will be highlighted on the HSPA. We talk about test-taking strategies. We work on open-ended strategies with them. So we do that every year, and it's really turned out to be a great a tool for us in our classes. The other thing we do is we have the luxury and not even a luxury anymore, it's a necessity of a year-long geometry class. And we've taken advantage of this class to provide students with an opportunity to get benchmarked in our HESPA. So we're giving them the test several times during the year, and we're kind of tracking their progress and adjusting our instruction to meet their needs. And again, it's really paid off. We're using Study Island this year. We may move to a different program next year. That's something that the department is looking into. Mr. Coppola also talked about the personalized student learning plans. Those are for our eighth grade students who come into the district partially proficient. It's a state mandate now that we track those students for their 4 years here at Manasquan. We create portfolios. Again, we have to benchmark them. We have to show that we are allowing them or giving them opportunities to progress in the subject matter. Some items that aren't up there is the fact that I work with a great group of people. My department, as well as my in-class resource teachers that work with our teachers, we do a great job. There's a ton of collaboration. We work really closely together, and I think we're really getting a great job done there. Some of the other things, my teachers have really high expectations for the students in their classes, and they follow through, and that's kind of their key thing. They're totally invested in the students and their ability to do well in class, and they follow through. And the last thing that we would like to do, and it's going to talk about it a little bit later, we're looking forward. Mr. Coppola talked about the Common Core State Standards. They're very rigorous, and it's not the same math that, you know, we talked about the math that we took when we were in high school, and
from you might be a little older than me. It's like a whole new ballgame, folks. And we've been addressing it for several years now. We've aligned our curriculum, and we're really doing a great job. And just like Mr. Capola said, it starts in the middle school and works all its way all the way through the high school. So we've been doing that for a while. It's paying off. I think when you see the SAT scores, when you see the AP scores, you're going to see that we're preparing our students to do well on these critical thinking tests. So, you know, I'm super proud of my guys and girls. And I think that is all. Mrs. Pollock's going to come up and tell you some great things, too, but I appreciate your time. Have a great holiday, folks.
I hate following him. He's so animated. And he's spinning around. I'm afraid I'm going to get dizzy. The supervisor of special education, the numbers that were reported in the language arts slides, and I apologize for my back, the language arts slides and the math slides contain the students with special who are special education students were within those slides. This slide alone represents the cohort of 37 special education students who took the HSPA last year. As you can see from the slide here, our passing rate in Manasquan High School is 71.1, which is a little under the DFG, and that's the first time in many, many years that it's been like that since we've been reporting it. So I went and I sort of looked at why that was, and as Craig had mentioned, when we get our 37, when the cohort is examined, 30 students that took this test that represent the 71.1 are in-house students here at Manasquan High School. And if I look at how those 30 did, 26 of those students in-house were proficient. So that made the in-house passing rate in language arts for Manasquan High School 87%. So that, you can see, well exceeds the DFG. And then we received today those students who did not pass, the four students who were not proficient in the HSPA when it was taken for the first time, took the test again. Three of those four students passed in language arts. So I can proudly report that 97% of Manasquan High School special education in-house students are proficient in language arts. So 97% certainly blows 77 out of the water, right, Mr. Murin? So I'm very proud of that for the DFG. As Mr. Murin had said, what we did was we also looked at that 37. 30 were in-house. Seven of those students are placed out of district. Those students are in, Mr. Murin referred to 10. I'm just talking about of those 10, seven were special education students placed out of district. And they are placed in special education behaviorally disordered programs because of their special education needs. Of those seven, only one of those seven was proficient, and that is why I believe this our passing rate in the language arts was somewhat below the DFG as reported here. Certainly we're very concerned, I'm very concerned about the progress of all our students, both in-house and out of district. However, I have to be mindful, and I'm asking you to be mindful, that those students who are placed out of district are working on not only academic issues, but behavioral and emotional issues, which sometimes it's very difficult for them to demonstrate proficiency in the same way that our students in-house are able to do so. If we look at the math, same thing, our math score. Yes. I'll speed it up, is that your point? Our math for Manasquan High School was 54.1. As you can see, by the sheer percentage reported here, we did exceed the DFG. Again, however, if I pull out the 30 that were in-house, our passing rate is, in-house passing rate was 60%, actually. And again, if I look at those students who retook the HSPA in the math, add those to our passing rate, our overall in-house passing rate for this cohort in math was actually 77%. So you can see that the DFG passing rate was 49.4, our in-house is 77%. So there's no question that our special education students in-house are performing very, very well. And as Mr. Murin had mentioned, Mr. Pollack mentioned, that doesn't happen by accident. That happens by good teaching, good collaboration. Most of our students are placed in what's called in-class resource programs, So those students are in general education classes with the support of a special education teacher. So the natural collaboration that happens between general education and special education affords our students to be exposed to the core content, but yet the special education teacher is able to provide those students with the accommodations in order to access the education. And certainly, good teaching strategies, the articulation that happens between special education department and general education in all areas, language arts, math, science, social studies, we're seeing the fruits of that, those efforts. Thank you.
Okay, and just to finish up with the HESPA part, just some conclusions we have here, some things that come out of this test. But again, just to put this all in a historical perspective, one of the things that kind of sum it all up, in the last 5 years, we have cut our limited proficient rate, the non-passing rate, by over two-thirds in math and language arts. During that time, we've almost doubled our advanced proficient rate over that time. And again, and it's going to be a constant theme tonight, it really speaks to the dedication of our supervisors and our teachers for all the hard work that they put in. Because again, the HESPA is not a self-selected test. Every student in the building takes this test. And this is where we're compared against other schools in the state and our district factor group, so we take a lot of pride in these numbers, and we'll do even better this year. So that's the first part, obviously the first part of our program that we're, again, very proud of. So at this time, I'll turn it over to Mr. Place, who's going to talk to you about our biology scores on the post biology.
Just a brief history a little bit, because this is the first time we're including biology at the end of course test as part of this testing report. And really the reason is because for quite a while, and I'll explain in a second, but for quite a while, the state really was unclear about, what the direction of secondary science testing was going to be. If you go back to the mid-2000s, the state was adding another section to the HESPA. Okay, so they added another day to the HESPA called the HESPA science test. And that was slated to be a graduation requirement. It was going to be just like the language arts and math parts of the HESPA, another day of testing where you get a score and then, be accountable for that. In 2007, that was the last time the HESPA science was given. They retired it. They never counted it as a graduation requirement. And at that time, replaced it with what they called the end-of-course biology test. And that's really the genesis of what we have today. End-of-course biology was field tested in 2008 and 2009. It became an operational test in 2010. With that administration. So really we have 3 years of scores at this point to look at, with 2010 being the first time they were released. It was, again, at that time, 2 years ago, supposed to become a graduation requirement. The class of 2014, the incoming class of 2014 when they were freshmen, were the first class to be subject to the new graduation requirements that require taking a year of biology. Right? So with that requirement, passing the end of course biology, or what's now called the biology competency test, was supposed to be a graduation requirement, much like HESPA. Math and language arts. The state has postponed that. At this point, we know it's postponed indefinitely. They have not told us that it will be. So at this point, even though all students that take biology are required to take this test, as the last bullet point says, is it pass or is it a graduation requirement to pass it? No. So that has some implications. First of all, and I'll talk about the similarities and differences, it's a different test, okay, than HESPA, in that it's given at the end of one course in 1 year. It's not an accumulation of the years that students have leading up to the HESPA. And also that piece that it's not a graduation requirement makes another layer of challenge for us as teachers, who try to encourage, students to understand. I hate when I hear the phrase, well, it doesn't count, It does count. We look at those scores, we use it for a lot of reasons, but are kids held accountable at the same level they are for HESPA? No, not at this point. So that's something to keep in mind when we look at it. So in terms of our scores over the past 3 years, again, 2010 being the very first time we have scores for this, you see this past year of the 2012 administration, we have a total proficiency, and that's really the important line to look at, I think, on the right. Basically means who's passing, of 81.5%. Now, if you compare that to math and language arts, that seems a little bit low. Okay? But again, I would emphasize that when you look at this in terms of what kind of test it is, okay, as opposed to math and language arts, and also when you see in a second what the state scores are, that'll make a little bit more sense. But the other indicator that we, of course, look at is, are we growing? How are we progressing? We did increase from the 2011 administration last year, which is always a good thing. Compared to the state and DFG, again, the same group of DFG schools that we compare to in the HESPA scores, We see that the state has a total proficiency, this is just last year's scores, okay, just 2012. The state has a total proficiency of 59.2. Okay, so that means about 40% of the state is failing this test, okay, when they take it. As far as our artistic fracture group, we have it's about a 70% proficiency, and here in Manasquan, like I said, we have an 81.5%. So if you think about the state being here, you know, in terms of passing, schools just like us are kind of here, you know, we're up here, okay, by another 10 percentage points. So overall, in the past year, we did increase our overall proficiency by 2.1 percentage points. We increased our advanced proficiency by 3.7. So if you go back and kind of look at this slide just real quick, you'll see that our proficient, you know, range did go down slightly last year, or from 2011 to 2012. That's really because we moved more kids from that proficient range into the advanced proficient range. Okay? It wasn't a drop in overall proficiency. So we did increase that advanced proficiency by 3.7 percentage points, and overall we exceed the state by about 22 percentage points, and our DFG by about 12 percentage points. Thank you. I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Jeff. Our advanced placement program, and I know that we've talked about this a number of times, but just to give you an overview as to what our advanced placement program is, the advanced placement testing program recognizes high school students who have demonstrated college-level achievement through AP courses in advance. The American Council on Education recommends an AP exam grade of 3 or higher be awarded 3 semester hours of college credit. AP exams are graded from 1 to 5, 3 being qualified, 5 being most qualified. So 3 is considered to be passing, you know, the way the college board looks at it. And Manasquan High School mandates that all students enrolled in AP classes take the subject area test. So every student that's enrolled in an AP class takes that end of course test. AP courses offered in MHS, AP Calculus, AB, AP English Composition, AP English Literature, AP Studio Art Drawing, AP Studio Art 2D Design, AP Studio Art 3D Design, AP Psychology, AP Chemistry, AP Biology, AP Spanish, AP French, AP US History, AP World History, AP Biology, and AP Calculus BC, which is a new course that was offered in 2010-2011. And here you can see an overview of our scores. What you can see from this slide, a couple things that I want to point out to you. Since 2000, from 2010 to 2012, our passing rate, and again, we would consider that to be anything from a 3 and above, our passing rate in 2010 was 67%. Our passing rate in 2012 was 87%. So what you see in the trend here is that we are getting more and more students that are considered to be qualified by the college board to be taking these college-level courses. And understand this, these opportunities are opportunities for our students not just to get college credit, to be awarded college credit, but also, and this is something that we want to focus on a little later when Mr. McCarthy comes up, is it allows our students to take AP courses, which allows them to compete with students from other high schools that apply to similar colleges. So by expanding the program and by allowing more students in, that makes our students that much more competitive when they apply for these schools. And one of the things that you can see that's going to lead into my next slide is, as we've increased our numbers, our scores have actually gone up, which again is a major testament to all our teachers, not just our AP teachers, but all our teachers across the board. And it's also another theme that you're going to hear again tonight is, the one thing that we know about our students here at Manasquan High School is they're competitors. You see it on the athletic field. You see it as they try to, you know, outperform schools and community service. When we put our kids in positions to succeed, when we challenge them in the classroom, they compete and they succeed. Okay. Again, just a couple quick points. Since the mandate that all students enrolled in AP classes take the exam, the number of total AP tests has risen from 114 in 2007 to 199 in 2012. The average score in 2007 was 3.27, while the average score in 2012 was 3.53. Percentage of 4s and 5s has risen from 28% in 2009 to 54% in 2012. We have nearly doubled the amount of students, the percentage of students that score in the 4 and 5 range. Again, a common theme, We're not talking about just passing. We're not talking about maintaining proficiency in the HESPA. We're not talking about just getting a 3. We're talking about taking kids to the next level. In almost doubling the percentage of students that fall into this category, this is an amazing number. An amazing number, and it really, again, is a credit to our kids. And just to kind of culminate this, in 2012, the College Board recognized Manasquan High School's outstanding achievement with the AP program by naming us to the AP District Honor Roll. And just to put that in a little perspective, Manasquan is one of the top 5%, according to the College Board and the AP program, Manasquan is in the top 5% of all high schools in the nation. Only 539 schools nationwide and in Canada received this distinction. Only 34 districts in New Jersey and only 3 districts in Monmouth County received this distinction. And again, in the press releases on the website, I know that the board was good enough to recognize this accomplishment at a previous meeting. But one of the things, the manner in which we got selected for this was, again, by increasing the access in terms of students getting into these courses. While we did that, simultaneously, our scores kept going up. And again, this is something where we're obviously very proud of. My staff will tell you that I'm very proud of, because I haven't stopped talking about it in a month and a half. But the thing that's impressive about this is we're receiving national recognition for academic achievement at Manasquan High School. This is a national award that we think is obviously a centerpiece for our high school for years to come. So. Those are some of the general overview here. We want to continue with this program. We are going to look to include more students, involve more students in our AP and honors program, again, to challenge them even more so we can even take our school to another level. So that's kind of an overview of our advanced placement program. Turn it over to Ms. McCarthy now to talk about SAT.
Like our other test results, I'm proud to say our SATs have also improved. What I'd like to do with you tonight is take through a few slides and talk about our SAT scores from the class of 2012. Critical reading up on the screen. If you notice, the state average from 2010 through 2012 stayed steady at 495. Our national average actually went down slightly, but at MHS, from 501 in 2010 to 509 in 2011, we topped out at 518 for the class of 2012. In math, we have similar results, where we see MHS scoring high, substantially higher in 2012. The state average from 2010 to 2012, 514 to 517. National average went down slightly. And if you look at MHS, 508 in 2010, 528 in 2011, and 539 in 2012. Substantial increase in the math scores. At this point in the year, the guidance counselors are meeting with the sophomore and junior students who took the PSAT. And what we're doing with that is reviewing those results with those students, going over their answers. They get a nice report of student answers. It's a really good practice. It shows them their strengths and areas of weakness, what they have to work on, and this will help them prepare, you know, to take the SAT sometime this spring for juniors. We also, in meeting with those students, like to have a game plan so they know exactly what they're doing, what they need to do to get ready to max out their scores on the SAT. So we're very proud of these increases. We see a nice trend. We want that to continue, and we're doing that in our guidance office by meeting with students and discussing a game plan for testing with each and every one of them. We also encourage them to take the PSAT in their sophomore and junior years. And Mr. Kapal will talk later about our initiative in that regard. College admission is getting harder and harder. We want our kids to be able to compete for these elite schools, and these schools want high SATs. So in order to compete, we want our kids to get those high scores like they did last year, and each year improve steadily. There are some schools that are test optional, over 850 in our country, but these are schools that our kids aren't applying to as much. They still want to go to the elite schools. In terms of the ACT, we do see a trend where more kids are looking to take the ACT, but still the majority of our test takers are in the SAT program. PSAT and National American, all those things that the College Board provides, we are steadily looking to increase all our scores across the board. We do have a ranking here, just to give you a perspective. Jess, if you could hit that slide for me, please. This is 2011, which placed us in this position, 96 out of 314. With our high scores for the class of 2012, this ranking will go up substantially when we get that ranking this spring for 2012 ranking of New Jersey high schools by SAT scores. We also, to give you an idea, this put us, I believe, 9th in the county. All right, so we're looking to improve, we're looking to move up that list, and we're doing that each day in our classroom instruction, also in our guidance program, and getting these kids to look at their PSAT, take prep courses, and really focus in on getting high scores to compete for these elite schools. Next slide.
Thanks, Sean. Okay, final slide. Just considerations and recommendations based on the information. One of the things that that our job is to, is we, you know, continue to improve. We need to maintain the levels, the high levels that we set for ourselves and the high standards. And these are some considerations and recommendations that we would like to share with the board just moving forward. The first is to try to maintain testing mandates and protocols for advanced placement program. Obviously, it's something where we still want to be able to mandate that students take the test. We can see, again, based upon what the College Board is telling us and the recognition that we've got, we're on the right track. We're on the right track in that we're opening it up, we're challenging more students, quality instruction, quality supervision. We're able to elevate this program to the highest level. That's important, so we would like to try to continue that. The second thing, this gets back to something that Sean said, explore ways to restore PSAT testing for all 10th and 11th grade students. Last year, what we were able to do is we were able to offer, and you know, with all 10th and 11th grade students, Manasquan was able to offer all 10th and 11th grade students the opportunity to take the PSAT. Why that is important is important for a couple reasons. One, it exposes all our kids to the test earlier. Two, it gives us an opportunity to qualify for more national merit scholars, which is the PSAT is a test that indicates that. And the other is that it allows us, with all our students taking the PSATs, it allows our counselors to individualize their remediation for students to prepare for the SAT. And we can also couple that with the test prep component that we have in Naviance, our online guidance curriculum. We'd also like to institute a math lab for challenged students. Mr. Muren, very proactive with his department, and also looking forward. We'd like to look forward and create a math lab for students who need to be enriched and need to be remediated. We would like to do that over third and fourth block at some, you know, at some juncture. Work that into our schedule to kind of give a more comprehensive approach in terms of you know, helping our students in math. And another initiative that we would like to implement, and we will implement in this spring, will be a junior final exam exemption in the spring of 2013. What we would like to do here is that Manasquan, only senior students have the opportunity to be exempt from final exams. The way they are exempt from these exams is they need to have an A through the entire course. What we would like to do moving forward is offer a limited exemption opportunity for juniors. And we would do it this way. Every junior would have the opportunity to be exempt from one exam if they got an A through the entire course, along with a teacher recommendation. The student would also be able to qualify for a second exam exemption if they got an A in the course, they got a teacher recommendation, and they scored in the advanced proficient range on the HESPA that they take in March. We get those scores usually in the beginning of June. So what we would be able to do is they would actually qualify for a second exam exemption, either in math or English. This will do a couple things. One, it provides incentives for students to continue to do well in their classes. Two, it creates a culture of achievement, which is what we're trying to promote here. And the other thing is it also gives them an incentive to move beyond proficient range into that advanced proficient range on the HESPA exam. So this is something that we're looking to do. We think it's a nice initiative. A good bonus for our junior students moving forward. It also, in terms of it being a limited policy or a limited opportunity, they wouldn't have an opportunity to be exempt from all their exams.
still have that experience in terms of, you know, taking final exams for the, for at least a couple of classes. So these are things that we'd like to consider for moving forward, and again, just getting this, keeping us at the level that we're at. And I guess I'd just like to close by saying I want to thank the Board of Education for their support. You know, everything that we get in terms of, you know, the time that we ask for PLCs during the school year, your commitment to offering professional development to all our teachers is an important part of what we're trying to do. And the other thing that I'd say is that, you know, one of the things that you're seeing, all the indicators that we've shown you tonight, and we've got a number of different percentages going, I think, but all the indicators that we saw have shown incredible growth over the last 3, 4, 5 years. And it's important to note because, again, as we start, we know that we have to compete for students. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, enrollment concerns. A lot of high schools are dealing with the same thing because students have so many choices. These are the tools that we need to use to, again, give our current students the most opportunity to advance and to go to the next level, but also to entice more students from our sending districts to come and stay at Manasquan because we believe that we offer the best opportunity that a comprehensive high school can. And we're very proud of these test scores. Again, they're not just snapshots. They're indicators of what our teachers and our students do every day. And I'll close by saying this, and this is how I closed our open house for our eighth graders a couple weeks ago. Two best things about Manasquan High School, teachers and students, and the relationship that these teachers have with these students, that's really the, what you're seeing right here is the product of all that. And this is what we see every day. So again, I want to thank the, board. I also want to thank our teachers for being here, our administrators, and thank you very much. Happy holidays.
Do you want to keep the projector up for this report?
We'll need that up for that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I'll just want to grab my paper and my glasses. So.
Michelle.
I'm going to see that.
You like that this time of year?
Yeah, I'll take care of that. I knew one missed that. Yeah, thank you.
Are we ready to go, thanks?
I think so, yes.
Good evening, thanks for having us. My name is Jeremy Garfield. I don't think I need
okay.
that, thanks. My name is Jeremy Garfield, I'm the director at Dome Tech, and with me is Brian Ryder, senior engineer at Dome Tech. We performed an energy audit on the facilities, and we wanted to go over the results. Just a little bit about our company. We're an energy and engineering consulting company. We're located up in Edison, New Jersey, and we have offices around the country. We're owned by United Technologies, and we're an unbiased engineering firm, so we really live to give advice to our clients on how to optimize their building performance and reduce energy consumption. All right, the program under which we did this energy audit is called the LGEA, Local Government Energy Audit Program. It's a program that's heavily incentivized and is run by the BPU. There's 5 companies that are approved for the work. Everyone had to bid on the work, and we were awarded the project. It's a standardized application, a standardized scope of work. And again, 100% reimbursed. This is the scope of work that we went through for the facilities. I'll explain it very quickly. I'm not going to go over every piece of it in this presentation. I want to be brief and highlight a few things that we found that we think are worth chasing. And we also want to go through the renewable energy study that we did as part of this scope of work. The program has us go through the historic energy consumption, which means look at how you're using energy over a period of time to see how it's increasing, see how you're dealing with energy rates going up, and seeing if you're consumption by kW hour and gas therms is going up over time or going down over time. We provide a full facility description with a complete equipment inventory, which is always good to have. The meat of the project is to find and identify energy conservation measures. We're going to describe those in a little bit. We call them ECMs. It's just an easier way to talk about them. And we're not going to go through every single one that we found. It would take a long time. Again, we're going to highlight a few, and the report is available for anyone to look at, including our calculations and all the background information. We go through renewable and distributed energy measures. We're going to talk today about wind, and we're going to talk today about solar in this presentation. We go through energy procurement strategies. You know, this is a deregulated market for energy. If you've ever eaten dinner at your house, you've probably gotten 17 calls from people wanting to sell you energy. We don't sell energy. We help our clients determine the best way to go about buying deregulated energy, but we give you a strategy. In this case, we're not really going to talk about that. You're in a group purchasing a situation that gives you a very, very solid rate. And the other thing that we go through is how we analyze the measures that we come up with. And we provide all of the calculations in the appendices. I'm not sure if you can see this chart well. This is the full list of energy conservation measures. The actual chart's a lot bigger. It goes through gas savings, electric savings, demand savings. But what I wanted to show today is just the relative savings by measure and the relative paybacks. So you can see some of the paybacks, which is just the cost of doing the measure divided by the savings, are very quick, less than a year. And some of them are substantially longer. I think, you know, this is a really good look at potential capital plan for upgrading equipment. And using this as a tool, if it's not a very quick payback project and very attractive to move into right away, something that you want to think about if stuff breaks. Some of the longer payback items might look more attractive when you have a broken piece of equipment. And we'll talk about your boilers in this building in a little bit. So, you know, using all the measures, we found about $50,000 worth of savings with an average weighted payback of about 7 years. If you implemented all the ECMs, this is just sort of a conversion calculation that everyone likes to feel good about. You know, 23 cars off the road and 36 acres of trees planted annually. Okay, so I want to go into the measures a little bit. Some of the measures we're bringing up because they're fast payback and Bernie's already implemented them. So we thought we'd talk about it. But a lot of it has to do with your HVAC system. HVAC is the heating, ventilation, air conditioning. And it represents a large percentage of the energy that you use in your building besides lighting. Those two make up the majority. This measure basically said that the schedules by which you were running the equipment didn't really match the time you were in your building, and you were running the equipment a little bit too long. And we recommended different schedules, we implemented them, and you're probably already receiving some of these savings. So the savings are about $8,500 a year, and we put a net implementation cost in there of $5,000. One thing you have to know about the way that we estimate our costs is we're very conservative. We don't get quotes. This isn't an investment grade audit. So we're using our knowledge on past projects, and we're also trying to be conservative in considering that you're going to outsource all of the work. In this case, it's not true. This one's all done by in-house people. All right, the next two, and it's tough to see the number because it's up on the roll there, but the next two, 2A and 2B, are solutions for this building from a control standpoint. I'm going to have Brian. Brian was the one that did the audit. I'm going to have him describe the two options briefly. But we think it represents a really good opportunity, and it may not show in the savings that we're stating in the project, which is $3,450, because installing or upgrading your control system doesn't just give you savings, but it allows you to implement strategies on your systems that allow you to be more active in using outside air when it's cold, controlling the units from a time standpoint, and upgrading to new units and new systems as these things fail and get old. So I think, Brian, if you could just briefly describe the unit measure controls and then the system measure controls.
Sure. All right, kind of like Jeremy's mentioned already, we go back one slide, not to cover what he's already covered, but you already have a control system, a fairly good control system at the elementary school that has a lot of capabilities as far as scheduling timing. Think about your house when you set your thermostat back when you leave and you turn it back up when you get home, and you might turn it off at night and vice versa. It's the same thing you do with the school, except on a larger scale. Over there, you have the capability to do a lot of things. You have a computer you can sit behind, you can go in, you can look at all your different rooftop units, and you can schedule them on, schedule them off, and they kind of walk away, and it works on its own. In the high school here, we have a little bit different of a story. Everything is, I don't want to say piecemeal, but kind of put together here. This is from one year, this is from a different year. And nothing kind of ties together into that one central computer that you can sit behind and have it do everything for you. So one of our recommendations is to have that be put in, a system where you can have everything tie in either wirelessly or through communication cabling, and have someone be able to sit behind a computer and see exactly what's happening everywhere, and tell all your pieces of equipment throughout the building what to do, what not to do, and when to do it. That's a very expensive measure, and it's a lot to take on at one shot. We'll kind of cover that in a second, but just to go back to this ECM measure one, at that school you had it, and you were telling the units to come on at a certain time and to go off at a certain time. But it, like Jeremy said, they had them on like 14 hours a day, where people were only in the classroom for maybe 11 hours. So just shaving off a couple hours here and there over the school year really saves. Bringing us back to this building, where we don't have a control system like that, these unit ventilators, which has one or maybe two in every one of the classrooms in this school, don't have control. So they're running their fans 24/7, 365, and that's just a small little fan horsepower. But you know, for 43 units in this building, once you sum them all together and you put it for 8,760 hours a year, you start talking about a couple dollars here. And that's just on the fan power alone. We didn't consider conditioning as far as the cost to heat and the cost to cool. So just fan power alone, we're talking $4,000 here. So we have two options that we're recommending. One we'll cover briefly is just putting in time clocks, where it just pretty much tells everything to shut off at this time or everything to turn back on at this time. That's basically what this 2A is. 2B is a little differently. You have an electronic control system and you have a pneumatic control system, which is controlled by air. For the places where you still have the older pneumatic control system, you can basically take the existing controllers off the wall, buy a wireless control, tie it back into the wall, hook up the same computer, and control that from a front end. You don't need to put cabling all the way through the school, through the ceilings, and back tied into the same location. You can have it all do it wirelessly. So that's another option that we have. It's obviously more expensive, but it's another way of controlling, and you might gain some more efficiency by being able to control them from a front end rather than just an on-off. 2B was the whole building management system replacement. That's kind of what I touched on earlier. It's a big expense to see. You see, it's over $500,000 is estimated cost. That includes, I think, 43 unit ventilators, two chillers, four boilers, six pumps. Basically, every mechanical device in this school would all be tied in together, where someone from the facility staff would be able to sit behind it and control everything, see what's happening. Sometimes things are running, you don't even know they're running, and you don't see it for years. You know, and here you see it all. You have alarms, you have schedules, you have everything. It's a big chunk to take in at one time when you think about it, but this is something where we want to present it to you. We're not trying to sell you anything and implement it ourselves, but we want to say, hey, there's an opportunity here, and we want to put it out there so that when you guys are planning your projects, you have it in the back of your mind. So maybe you are replacing these three unit ventilators in this room. Maybe you tie them into the system. And then when the next units fail or your boiler plant goes down in the next, knock on wood, a couple of years, you tie them in. And then little by little, as long as you have the good base, you can kind of start building and adding until this school has the capability of doing what that school does. And in that case, you're going to start saving a lot of money. We're showing here just that same almost $4,000, but that's just the fan power on the unit ventilators we talked about. That's not including your pump energy, your chillers, your boilers, and all everything else. We just wanted to bring that to your attention, and I think Jeremy has a few other things he might want to mention about that.
Yeah. one point I said unbiased, we don't do these projects. We don't buy, we don't sell equipment, we don't install systems. Brian's passionate about it because he enjoys talking about it. The second thing is, on the building management system, you can grow. You can build into it. We're required by the state to present it in a certain way. It doesn't look good when we put the $500,000 out there, and that's not the best solution to go and buy the whole system and do it all at once. It's much better piecemeal. And I think the I think that's all we wanted to talk about the building management system. I think it's a good opportunity. It can give you a lot more savings. Oh, the last piece was, on something like this, you don't buy off of a report like this. You don't budget off of a report like this. If you think that you want to bring the building into a controllable status, you have to have someone look at it. You have to have someone look at the actual units, mechanically determine what's wrong with them so they can get fixed and be controlled, and determine what cabling and what communication you have in place. And it kind of becomes a project, sort of like the boiler project that you just completed over at the elementary school. So it's not a, yes, let's vote on this today. It's a, hey, maybe we should consider adding to the indoor air quality, comfort, and energy savings of this building by, you know, looking at this project. Some of the other measures that we found that are kind of simple compared to the building management system, you have 5 vending machines, and they sell something called a Vendmizer. I don't know if you own the machines or if you don't. If you own them, you can buy a unit that sort of does what your home refrigerator does, is that when the temperature reaches a certain temperature, it shuts the lights off and shuts the compressor off. And then when the kids, you know, look in the refrigerator for 5 minutes for what they're looking for, you can hear the compressor kick back on. These vending machine power management units, and they're relatively inexpensive, they use a proximity sensor, and they shut the unit off when no one's around, turn it back on. If you don't own them, you should, and you're leasing them for a term, you should demand them on your next release. Computer power management systems. These are systems that you can install network-wide that do the same thing as the time of day scheduling with HVAC. When no one's using all of these computers that are all on right now, the network shuts them down. Right now the screens may be blank, but if you move the mouse, they come back on. They're on. They just shut the monitor off so you don't burn it out early and call them the warranty. So these systems are relatively inexpensive. We have $16,000 for both schools. It's really conservative. I mean, I'm sure that, I can't remember the name of the company that we've been recommending, and I can get that to you, but I can't remember who they are. Yeah. They're very good systems. They don't get into your network so that they cause an IT issue. You know, everyone's a little bit nervous about their system, and they shut your computers down. You have 650 computers throughout the district. Something worth thinking about. Not going to go into the specifics on it, but the high school and the elementary school still have lighting opportunities. The high school has about $9,300 a year in lighting opportunities, and the elementary school has about $10,000 a year. There's great incentives available for lighting changeouts. I don't think you can call someone in, have them replace the lights, and take the incentive, and it's a break even. But I think 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, when we first started talking, we were poo-pooing the LED lights, and in 3 years, they've really, really come.
Gotten so much better.
They're great. Yeah. They've gotten much better, the light's better, and it's something that you might want to consider looking at the lighting, seeing, you know, we have a chart that describes exactly what lights, it's a line by line of every room, so you can look at the opportunity and see what light might be appropriate, what we recommend. It's an easy win lighting. With the lighting, OX sensors. OX sensors in classrooms used to be kind of looked down upon because if everyone was quiet and taking a test, the lights would go out and the teacher would have to wave her hands in the corner, and it doesn't work that way anymore. They use heat. So if there's heat in the room that's above, you know, what the room temperature is supposed to be, it says it's occupied. There's some real good opportunity. When you mix the efficient lighting with the occupancy sensors, it's a real big win. And I think the same vendors can implement those strategies for you at the same time. So it's not two separate projects. And again, good incentives out there from the state of New Jersey. look at the simple payback on this one, 81.8 years, not exactly a tight project, but the number in front of it is 7.6 years, and what we do is the 81 years is if you just stop right now, take those out, and put new boilers in, which you wouldn't do because they're making hot water, which is making heat for you. But if they fail, our recommendation is to go to a more efficient boiler than what you're running, and then the 7-year payback is for the premium that you pay over replacing your boilers with like and kind compared to a more efficient solution. This is another one that has to be studied. You have to determine your heat load in the rooms and determine what size of boiler, but the boilers have come a long way as well. And this is something that definitely keep in the back of your mind. If something fails, you can make a different decision instead of the same decision and save energy. All right. Now we get into the renewables. I'm going to do wind, and Brian's going to go over the solar. I'm going to do wind real quick because I know down the street they tried to do wind and didn't work out so great. You're in an area where the wind speeds are appropriate for wind turbines. However, when the Board of Public Utilities came out with the map of New Jersey and showed the areas that were good for wind, the EPA came out with a map the next day that showed areas where they increased the protection on species. And the maps are overlaid perfectly. So there's a little bit of difficulty getting wind turbines in residential areas, in shore areas, especially in higher-end residential areas where the residents are very involved because there's some politics behind wind turbines. The financials are okay on these. If you want to talk about it, we'll give you all the details. I just wanted to say you're in a good area for it, but I don't think it's worth really talking about. Anyone want to talk about it? Want to know why it's bad to talk about? Okay. Economics. There's one that the 50 kilowatt unit's 12 years. Not a horrible project,
but it's large.
Yeah, and noisy. Okay. Solar. Let's talk about solar.
All right, we'll keep this quick also. But we wanted to bring it to your attention that we did do a preliminary screening for solar photovoltaic system here at both the elementary and the high school. On this map here that you can see, this aerial shot, you can kind of see we've laid out a few areas that we think would be most appropriate to consider installing solar panels. The way that we do our analysis is that we go up on the roof, we walk around, we see where you have the area and where you don't have a lot of obstructions, and then we have a whole bunch of calculations that we do. The gist of it is that we'll take the overall square footage of that open area to determine how many panels we can fit in that area. And then based on the number of panels that we think we can fit on your roof, we can determine an output per panel and then a system output about how much kilowatt hours or how much electric can you produce annually. So this is basically the breakdown of it.
Let's see if you can see it well here. Okay. Yeah, it shows up.
So we basically have it broken down by high school and elementary school. The first line shows, the total consumption annually at each one of the schools. Then we talk about we're going to look to install on the roof. And then you can see the one system size will be about 219 kW, and the other one will be at 273 kW. That value is determined based on, like I said, square footage. From those values, we can see that the annual output estimation or calculated would be about 1,000 kilowatt hours. And for the two buildings together, it's about 518,000 kilowatt hours. Yes. So then if you, that shows the overall annual consumption again, and it says that based on the size of it and the amount of space you have available, you could basically generate 17% of your annual electrical use based on the solar panels, or 23% at the elementary school. The 13.8 cents per kilowatt hour is the rate that you currently pay for your energy. So at that rate, producing that much energy would save you approximately $31,000 or total of $71,000 a year by having those panels on your roof. And there's solar renewable energy credits, which the number goes up and down, and I know there's a lot of backing we can tell you about SREX, but you probably have a little familiarity with it already. Right now the rate's fairly low. It's about $75 per SREC. So you could produce, in addition to the money you're saving, you'd also produce about 17 21 and a total of almost $40,000 in renewable energy credits. So you add that $40,000 plus your $70,000, and that comes up with the money that you're saving, essentially. Then you look at the system cost. You're talking a total system install cost of approximately $2.25 million. And when you do the simple payback like we talked about before, it's about 21 years. So yes, it does look really attractive. Based on our preliminary study, I think the payback's a little bit farther out than you're looking to do, and as far as making you want to, like Jeremy said before, just vote on it right now. But we wanted to present it. We do have more information as far as calculations and further backing to it that I know that you're dying to hear right now, but I won't make you sit through. But it's all here, and Peg has all the rest of it too, so if you're interested in that. But we wanted to present both, as part of the program, the wind and the solar aspects, and let you know that it's there. It might not be the best option at this time.
Right, those numbers are based on purchasing.
Purchasing the system.
Not doing
exactly.
Purchasing rate.
So there's two income streams when you purchase. It's the savings and the SRECs. The SRECs, last year, we were selling them for $640 an SREC, and today they're at $75. And that has to do with supply and demand in the market. When PSE&G turned on all those panels on the poles that you see all over the state, they really decreased the demand for SRECs because they had enough renewable energy to offset their requirement. The other alternative is a power purchase agreement, okay, which is essentially when you rent your roof to a solar provider. They put panels up there, and you're the host. The benefit that you get is twofold. You get power cheaper than you can buy from the utility because you're generating it right on your roof. And you get the educational value and the sustainability value. You don't get the sustainability credits. You don't get the attributes of the sustainability. They keep the SRECs. They get the depreciation on the asset. What you get is cheaper power, and you get to teach your students about the solar panels on the roof. The one thing I want to tell you, though, is you've negotiated yourself with this group, this energy purchasing group that you're part of, ACES, gotten yourself quite a good rate. Okay, you have 13.8 cents. And the benefit of solar on the roof economically is that it generates power at a lower rate. We're doing, and Brian's the project manager at Rutgers right now, in the Livingston campus. So we're looking at 500 kilowatt system. That's 0.5 megawatts. Rutgers is putting an 8-megawatt system over their parking lot. And they're getting, what was their rate that they got?
It was started out at about 12 and a half cents. So that's for an 8-megawatt system. So you're talking a 16th of the size that they have, and not nearly as a competitive rate. It's something we're not trying to talk you out of. Obviously, if you had someone come in and they did a whole study and a screening and they provided you with a rate, you'd easily be able to compare that, and it might not be a bad option to do such a thing, but we're, I don't want to say doubtful, but we would be interested in seeing if they could compete enough to make you want to do this based on the rate that you currently have.
It's not because of you're not Rutgers and you don't have 8 megs. It's because of the market right now for solar is kind of tough. The federal incentives went away. The income streams are, you know, depreciation and the SRECs for them. And the SRECs are real low right now, so that makes the rate that they charge you in electricity a little bit higher. So they're in sales. You can have them come out and do this for free and give you a price, and you can have them do that every 6 months if you want until the rate comes down enough so that it's attractive for you to do it. It's just something that, you know, and you can get multiple people to look at it if you want to have solar.
We've been watching it for about a year.
Just
we've been watching it for about a year just to see when it would be a good time. We have a plan in place, but
great.
Just haven't moved ahead with it.
All of their investments now are based on hedge, so it's good. It's kind of good right now that the SRECs are so low and that they're going to fast appreciate the asset. But that's where it is. If you buy it right now, it's about a 20-year project. There's a whole gob of projects on the list that are better than that. If you do a PPA and you can get the great rate, it might be an option for you. You can even have them take an insurance policy out on the roof so that if you need to change the roof, they'll actually come out, take the panels down, change, and then you leave them on the ground, change your roof, and then they'll put them back up. So there's options. We talked about additional engineering may be required for some of these projects. And these are the projects we think are worth talking about moving forward. And these are some of the assumptions that we used in our project. All these are in the report. So thank you for having us tonight. Do you have any questions before we go? If you think about them on the drive home, Hedge has all our information. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
Thanks, guys. Have a nice holiday.
Bob, I just had a question. Could we get this put on the website? Report. Don't talk.
The report?
Yeah.
I apologize.
Find out.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
The absent students agenda. You want to just put that over there? Thank you very much.
Okay. Before you get started, I just a little bit of housekeeping again. I neglected to introduce Kate Boyle from the Key Club as our student representative. Kate will be with us at all of our meetings or from here on. I guess we're going to be going to one meeting a month.
Yes.
And next week we'll be joined by the student council president. Is that correct?
Yes.
Well, welcome, Kate.
Thank you.
And at this point, I'll turn the floor over to Mr. Shelton for policy committee update.
Policy committee update we're doing?
Yes.
I think we met once. We were canceled due to the storm. Really what we did was reconfigure our bylaw to conform to the reorganization meeting, which will take place now next month. There have been no Strauss-Esme alerts as far as I know. Nothing has come out since June. So there hasn't been anything mandated upon us. And as such, we haven't had to do much there. We'll set the next meetings, I guess, for next month. So I think that's really all to report on that.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Any questions? Mr. Mahan?
Yeah. Okay.
You're on.
All right. All right, you have enclosed the enrollment report and the suspension report. The HIB report is document C. There was one incident which occurred in the elementary school. That was determined to be a bullying incident, and the disciplinary remediation was a detention and counseling. Also, at this meeting, I'd like to report to pick up on a theme that Michelle had mentioned, and expressing appreciation to those school districts and organizations that provided support to the Manasquan School District following the devastation from Hurricane Sandy. The outpouring from these groups has been overwhelming. Toys and gifts, gift cards from the Audubon School District, the recent visit from the representatives from Randall Township School District, who brought over 200 toys and, what was it, $14,000 worth of gift cards, the contributions to our students from the Squan Strong Organization, and the financial support for families in need, which was provided by the Long Blue Line. All of these things helped our school community to move past Sandy and to begin to return to normal. We still have a number of students who are unable to return to their homes, who are living in other towns and other areas, but this situation is improving. We're seeing more kids moving back. It's difficult to think that things are returning to normal given what occurred last Friday in Newtown, Connecticut. The horror of this incident and the grief we all feel leads parents to question how safe their children are when they send them off to school. It has also caused us, the teachers and administrators, to consider whether we would be prepared if such an event took place in our schools. Unfortunately, this kind of event is not new. Because of such tragedies that have been happening in our schools, we do have plans to safeguard children when they are in school. We regularly conduct drills to address hostile intrusions. We practice lockdowns, evacuations, active shooter drills, and bomb threat evacuations on a monthly basis. And this is required by the state of New Jersey, and probably most states now have those kinds of regulations in place. So in addition to the traditional fire drills that schools have done for years and years, now, instead of doing two fire drills a month, we do one fire drill a month and one type of one other type of drill. Each of these drills is given at least, is practiced at least twice during the school year. I believe that our staff knows how to react, and our students know what they must do in these situations. As we offer our thoughts and prayers for the children in Newtown, let's hope that we never have to put these drills to the test. That concludes my report, Michelle.
Okay, may I have a motion to accept the superintendent's report, item 1218-02?
So moved.
Thank you. Mrs. Walsh, second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Roll call.
Mrs. Barnes?
Yes.
Mr. Bauer?
Yes.
Mr. Campbell?
Yes.
Mr. Clayton? Mrs. DePalma?
Yes.
Ms. LaSalla?
Yes.
Mr. Sheldon?
Yes.
Mrs. Verdi?
Yes.
Mrs. Walsh?
Yes.
Mr. Wintersteller?
Yes.
Carried.
Okay, public comment on the agenda. Time may be allocated for public comment at this meeting. Each speaker may be allotted at a limited time recognized by the presiding officer. Individuals wishing to address the board shall be recognized by the presiding officer and shall give their name, address, and the group, if any, that they represent. Although the board encourages public participation, it reserves the right through its presiding officer to terminate remarks to and or by any individual not in keeping with the conduct of a proper and efficient meeting. During the public participation portions of this meeting, the board will not respond to questions from the public involving employment, appointment, termination of employment, negotiations, terms and conditions of employment, evaluation of the performance of, promotion or disciplining of any specific or prospective or current employee. This public forum is limited to comment on items included on the agenda only.
John Wintersteller, ordered a pizza. 8:15.
Obviously, I did not order a pizza.
I just got the text.
I may eat it later on, by the way. I haven't had dinner.
Well, but you I could got put the text you through could, your cell phone.
You could put it right up there. Yeah, right there.
No, they said, thank you.
I actually
you.
Went out to move my car, not to.
No, they said, thank you for your service on the Manasquan Board of Education. I don't know. One of your friends said this. I don't know. You're all set. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Good evening.
If anybody.
Whoever did that should at least tip the guy.
This was my finest moment on the board. If anybody would like to make public comment, please feel free to come to the. Do we have a microphone out there?
There's one right here.
And just state your name and any item on the agenda. May I have a motion? Do I have to motion to open the floor, Dick? Or I can open the floor?
I don't think you need it.
Okay.
I do think you need one to close it.
Understood.
The Long Blue Line Relief Fund is AKA the VIC Fund, standing for Victory in the Crisis. Just wants to thank all of you as board members and the Board of Education for your support. Your generous donations, which were $5,500 from the Rumson Manasquan football game, kicked off our relief fund tremendously. Our fund has raised over $50,000 and we have $910 in gift cards as of December 18th. We have a group of wonderful and caring guidance counselors, which we just kind of told them we were doing this. We didn't really ask them to do this. But it's led by Sue Talone and Denise Wegeman, and they met with us on December 5th and assisted us in the distribution of many donations. So far, the fund has issued checks varying in amounts totaling $40,000 to 30 different families from Belmar Elementary, which is Lake Como and Belmar, Riel Elementary, Manasquan Elementary, and Manasquan High School. With these checks and gift cards, some of the families have started to recover, and they remind everyone how the power of teamwork and commitment is what our community is all about. Our goal is to get these families back on a normal path so that the students can stay on the path of academic excellence. The guidance counselors continue to assess the needs of our students and advise us where to direct more funds. More good news, on December 7th, the relief fund was contacted by the nonprofit group, the Robin Hood Foundation, and we met and we had to do a proposal and they've granted us $30,000, which we're hoping will be in our account by the end of the year. Christmas bash was held on December 1st, and they have promised a portion of the proceeds from the VIC fund to go towards us. And Rocking for Relief is going to be a fundraiser presented by the Elks, and it's been set for January 12th, 2013. And again, the proceeds will benefit the VIC fund. Every day, donations are coming in, and by the end of the week, we hope we'll have close to $80,000, including the 40 we've already given out. So we're reaching as many as we can. We're going to continue to write checks. We hope to have another batch out before we all go on vacation, so we can give these families a little bit of light and a little bit of help. And we just appreciate all the support that you gave us, because because you really got us started.
Wendy, if you could just wait 1 second. First of all, we thank you. The board had made a decision previously to give a portion of the proceeds from the Thanksgiving game, and we still intend to do that. We're waiting to hear from the county, what is he, the county superintendent, Peg, or is he a business
county
administrator?
County business administrator.
There may be a snag, but we're hoping that that will not happen, but it looks like we hopefully can get another $3,600 and change to you. So as soon as we get the okay that we're good on that end, that'll be forthcoming. So.
I'm excited that money burns a hole in our pocket. My father always said that was true, but now it's definitely official because as soon as we get money, we start writing more checks.
Well, thank you very much.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
I'm Paul Battaglia, president of the Advanced Fine Education Association. Just wanted to bring up an issue with the recently approved policy 3282, which is the use of social networking sites, and 4282 for support staff. I guess my first question is, I would assume, obviously, since it's been approved and the board's read through the policy.
The policy committee has, yes, and then that makes the recommendations
right.
to the board.
Okay. My concern and the association's concern is, obviously, it's a policy that, by and large, affects the staff's use of social networking sites in and out of the classroom. So I have a couple questions that you may not be able to answer tonight, if you can, great. Obviously, Mr. Coppola touched on it before. The core curriculum content standards mandate now that we make a very considered effort in involving students in acquiring 21st century skills, most of which include the use of social networking sites. So our own website and some of the open source software that we use, Moodle, and like I said, our own district website, encourage the use of blogs, for instance. Okay? According to this policy, unless I'm misconstruing it, that would be against the board policy. Unless it's for a school project.
Can you cite where it could just to help us out?
Sure, yeah,
we go back to revisit it, Paul?
Yeah, number 7 says staff members are prohibited from using their, number 8 says, shall not post updates to their status on any social networking sites during normal working hours, including posting of statements or comments on the social networking sites. That's one of them. And then number 7 also goes on to say.
Maybe just finish that sentence.
Okay, all right. Of others during school time, unless it involves a school project. Employees must seek approval from the superintendent of schools for such use. So my concern is, how are we defining school project? Would be one of them. My other concern is normal working hours. So for instance, contractually, staff is allowed to sign out of the building on their prep period, correct? So if
no.
a staff member-
That's not supposed to be. I believe it's only supposed to be for lunch.
Well, all right, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so for lunch, so we sign out for lunch, right? Okay, and a staff member, let's say, goes to their house. They are not now allowed to post to a social networking site that's their own, normal working hours.
Paul, you know what, excuse me, if I could, I'd like
sure.
to get all of your concerns, and what we'll do is, obviously,
can
policy committee
yeah,
will revisit.
Right.
I just want to, before, I certainly want to finish and get all of your points down, but just so you're aware and the audience is aware, the district uses Strauss Esme for our policies. So when we get a policy that's recommended to our district as well as others, this wasn't something we created in-house. This
right.
came through them, and then we will tweak it according to what's in the best needs of our district. So if you could give me a list of all of your concerns, we're certainly going to meet again in January. We'll revisit and
okay.
See if we can address some
possible,
of those concerns.
Is it possible to involve staff or administration?
I don't see why not. If
okay.
we can arrange that, I think, to have somebody come into the policy meeting?
Yeah, actually, some of the concerns that you've expressed, Mr. Place had brought to my attention
right.
on Friday. You also did
right.
in an email. We've had a couple of discussions about it. Obviously, there's some interpretation that has to be made in terms of what the policy really means to this particular district. I don't believe that policy was a mandated policy, so therefore the exact language is not mandated language. It's a recommended policy. And we do accept, for the most part, I would say, the recommended policies that Strauss Esme suggests to us. In this particular one, though, you've raised some questions that we feel we're going to have to revisit and address.
May I suggest, Bob, if perhaps you could meet with Mr. Battaglia to address his concerns and bring it to the committee, or have him, whatever
well,
you decide is the best.
That's fine, and then Bob
yeah.
and I
right, and
yeah.
then we can do it that
yeah,
way.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Anybody else? You had to walk a long way.
I'm sorry?
You had to walk a long way.
Chair Walt, co-president of the Mass Fine Education Association.
This is in reference to 1218-16. I'm not really sure where the money savings would be.
Let me just, which item you're referring to.
Privatizing the grounds crew.
The item is for a request for a proposal. So at this point, all the board is doing is going out to explore our options. This is not making a commitment to award a contract. Tonight's action is strictly to go out and seek, you know, options for that. Other districts have been successful with cost savings. And what we're doing, Kurt, at this point is just exploring our options, and there'll be no definite decision. This certainly will come up should we go that route. So I don't want to alarm anybody or cause unnecessary angst. It's certainly something that other districts have been successful with, and this board has made the decision to look into it.
All right, well, I just want to bring out some key points that,
sure,
you know, if you guys do decide to pursue this, you know, things that would you might not look at right now that you want to bring to your attention. First is, if you look at other companies or school districts that tried to privatize or went out to privatize, yeah, the first year you might save a little bit of money. But then when all the extras come in later on, the following years, they're actually losing money. Other concerns were that you might lose control over grounds. Like an administrator or even a coach says, could you do this for me? And since they're not part of staff, they say, well, that's not my job. You got to contact my boss. So that's going to affect games, practices, and also administration problems. We also have a problem, too, that with, you know, we have two custodians coming in now. So with our contract right now, we also have bumping rights. So if two guys are going to lose their jobs and you're going to bump guys that are just coming right into the district, it's not fair to them. Were they, you know, were they told when they were hired that this is going on? Or is that going to be possible?
Oh, there's nothing going on. It's a matter of exploring the options. But I continue. I certainly want to hear all your concerns.
The work quality will go down. And you don't have someone on staff, you know, last minute, can you help out with this? Do you have, you know, field day, something like that, something has to be moved. Best things, you know, football games, there's a divot in the field, you don't have anyone there to fix the fields or last minute lining if there was a rain the day before. Just yesterday, I saw the grounds crew in the elementary school moving thousands of presents for hours on end, helping out. You know, we won't have that extra hand when we're in desperate need for an extra hand. Right now, our grounds crew, we're on staggered scheduling. So we have them covered from Monday through Friday, where they work Tuesday through Saturday. So every game is covered. If there's a problem, scoreboards are set up, they're broken down. All those extra costs, if you go out to a private company, those are going to be all extra costs because you have to cover, you know, individual games. I'll use this spring for an example. I'm a baseball coach. You have fields over at the high school here. You have boys and girls softball and baseball fields. You have Mallard Park. And you also have the elementary school. You know, if it rains in the morning, they're out there all the time pumping the water off, making sure that the games are playable, that we don't have to cancel games. Now, that's a problem. If you have an outside company, they're not going to be there working every day. I see the baseball field. They'll rake it out, let the sun dry it, mix it back in so the puddles are gone so we can play. You know, especially in the springtime, you know, I coached the 6th through 8th baseball team. Our schedule's crunched as it is. We can't add games on at the end of the year because, you know, school's getting out. You know, we have deadlines, they end up canceling games, and it's not fair to the kids. They only have a 10-game season as is. So that's, you know, we can't control the weather, obviously. And then you also have fields at the Army camp, too. You have 4 fields at the Army camp for lacrosse. So that's something else to keep in consideration. Every day they change garbages for the sports fields and also outside of the schools. We won't have that anymore. Also in the elementary school and the high school, they're pulled out of the off the grounds to set up and break down all the stages. Who's going to do that? Or is that going to be an extra cost for an outside company? I can speak for the elementary school. When there's a custodian that's out, they'll pull a grounds crew to help out with the cafeteria duties because there's 2 cafeterias running at the same time. So they'll come in and they'll help do garbages and make sure everything's running smoothly. I don't think an outside company is going to do that either. You know, if you go to an outside company, you have to look at snow removal. The snow removal company, regardless if it doesn't snow at all or it snows 5 feet, you're still paying the same amount of money, the contracted money. You know, if you have them on staff, they're there right there to help you out. Same thing with, you know, there's been times that it rains throughout the day,
turns the ice. They're out there icing, salting everything before the students are let out, the safety of the children. And also what happened on Friday, you're going to have outside people come in. You know, it's a friendly face.
What happened on Friday here? You mean?
No, in Connecticut. You know, you bring outside people. I mean, there's young students in the elementary school. They know the custodians.
Well, we're not looking to replace custodians. We're talking about ground.
They know the guys outside, if they're mowing the lawns, mm-hmm. or they're setting up, mm-hmm. you know, that's something to be said. So in closing, you know, before you cast your vote to go out and try to privatize for these, you know, take some of these key points and before you cast your vote.
Appreciate your concerns, Kurt, but just again, the vote that we'd be casting tonight is strictly to put a request for a proposal out. It's not to make a determination. And many of the things that you said we have addressed, we have looked at the costs, and we certainly, we have a fiduciary responsibility. We're elected. We're not going to make a decision that if buying the service is not comparable or better, regardless of cost savings, we will not make the decision. So this is strictly to gather information. So at this point, I appreciate that, and I hope you appreciate our concerns as well. You're welcome. Anybody else?
Hi, Donna Bassone, 122 North Main Street. I have the same issue. The ground services, that is not including the school janitors?
No.
Is that correct?
No, it is not.
100%.
100% not including the custodians.
Now, does this ground service include burning?
We would not be. We're not at this point looking to cut anybody. He's the building supervisor, so no, I don't think it would affect him. We have not written the proposal yet, Don. Again, at this point, we're asking permission to go out for a request for a proposal. The proposal still has to be detailed, written, and approved.
I just want to say one thing, follow up what he said. I personally, after the Connecticut thing, don't want to see strangers brought onto the property for any job without any heightened security or anything. I think the kids are in enough. I mean, we've had this issue with SROs in the grammar school. I've talked to you guys about those, and we really need to reinvestigate bringing in some sort of security, both the grammar and high school. I don't want to see strangers brought in, especially with what's going on lately.
I thank you for your comment. We appreciate your concerns. And again, just to be clear, this is not a commitment to anything at this point. It's just strictly exploring that option.
And it is just grounds right now, not
just grounds. Yes.
Okay.
You're welcome. I don't know if he was coming that way. No? I see nobody else. I have a motion to close the floor.
So
moved. Thank you, Mrs. Walsh. Second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Winterstella. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, before we get into the motions that we're approving from the Manasquan side, I think, Mr. Mahan, you have one addition to the personnel on 121803.
Yes.
Is that elementary or high school? Maybe it's not. Maybe it might be on the other side. Is it high school or elementary?
High school. It's a high school. It would actually be K-12 because it's approving a substitute. Michael Cran, Jr., has applied for substitute certification. His fingerprints, we received them late today. So I'd like to add them because Michael plans to assist us in our wrestling program. He was awaiting this documentation, which we received, as I said, late in the day. So I'd add Michael J. Cran to the list and approve him as a substitute.
Through K through 12?
K through 12.
Okay, so that is not on your documentation, but we're adding him. Okay. For the Manasquan motions, I'd like to ask for a motion to approve 121803 through 121809. Again, the Manasquan board members only. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. May I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mrs. Verdi. What I'd like to do is ask for discussion item by item. Is there any discussion on 03?
Do we have any reimbursement whatsoever for the storm?
Yes.
Salaries?
We don't have notification yet, but they thought that it would be covered at least, I think, what did they say at first, 70-some percent.
Is that FEMA or through insurance, I think, Mrs. Walsh?
Yeah, quite.
We have our insurance that we invoked as well as FEMA. So.
Okay. So this would not, if all of that were to come to fruition, this would not be in addition?
No.
Mm-hmm. To budgeted dollars. Thank
Any
you.
Discussion on 04? Any discussion on 05? Any discussion on 06? Any discussion on '07? Any discussion on '08? Any discussion on '09? Remember roll call, Mrs. Hahn?
Mr. Bauer?
Yes.
Mr. Campbell?
Yes.
Mr. Clayton? Ms. DePalma?
Yes.
Ms. LaSalle?
Yes.
Mr. Shelton?
Yes.
Mrs. Verdi?
Yes.
Mrs. Walsh?
Yes.
Mr. Wintersteller?
Yes.
Carried.
Okay, may I have a motion for the Manasquan and descending district motions 12-18-10 through 12-18-20?
So moved.
Thank you, Mr. Wintersteller. May I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Any discussion on item 10? Item 11? Item 12? Item 13? Item 14? Item 15? Item 16? Item 17? Item 18? Item 19? And item 20? Roll call, Mrs. Hahn.
Mrs. Barnes?
Yes.
Mr. Bauer?
Yes.
Mr. Campbell?
Yes.
Mr. Clayton? Ms. DePalma?
Yes.
Ms. LaSalle?
Yes.
Mr. Shelton?
Yes.
Mrs. Verdi?
I'm abstaining from 12-18-10 and yes to the rest.
Okay. Mrs. Walsh?
Yes.
Mr. Wintersteller?
Yes.
Motion carried.
Okay, at this point, we're on old new business. I have two items. If anybody has any items they'd like to go first, anybody for old new? No? Okay, on January 8th, we'll be conducting our reorganization meeting. This is a little different than years past because of the change in the elections. I ask that we sent out the agenda for that along with your last packet, so if you could please review that, and could you have any questions, or should you have any questions, if you could try to get them to the board office this week, that'd be helpful. The school's going on break, so this way we can address any concerns so that when we come back, we're ready to go. We will also be swearing in the reelected board members, Tom Bauer, newly elected members, Ken Clayton, Mike Shelton, Tom Pellegrino, Pat Walsh. We'll also be electing board officers on that night. And since this is the last meeting of my term as president, I'd like to thank every one of you for your support, your dedication, and your hard work. I'm very proud of how much we've accomplished, and I really look forward to the challenges that we have ahead and working with each and every one of you, and I think we have an excellent team, so I thank you. Anybody else for anything old new?
I do, Michelle. I do. When our reorg was January 3rd, 2013, but we changed the date.
To the 8th.
To the 8th,
yeah.
Right? I just like to put it out there that I'd like to see you could remain as president of the board. I know we're not going to have any conversations, you know, in between, so I like to put that out there.
I appreciate that. So we'll see what that night brings, and but I do appreciate that. Also, there is just on while we're on the reorg, we'll also be doing some items. If you notice on the agenda, that we'll have to revisit again in May because of the way we changed the election to November. Okay? All right, at this point, we'll open up the floor to the second public forum where you can comment on anything that's on your mind. Anybody? Do I need a motion to close? A motion to close the floor?
So moved.
Thank you, Mrs. Walsh. Second.
Second.
Thank you, Mrs. Verdi. Roll call.
Mrs. Barnes? Mr. Bauer? Mr. Campbell?
Yes.
Mr. Clayton? Ms. DePalma?
Yes.
Ms. LaSalle?
Yes, I'm sorry.
No, okay. Mr. Shelton?
Yes.
Mrs. Verdi?
She's doing a good job.
Mm-hmm. No Mrs. Verdi?
Yes.
Mrs. Walsh?
Yes.
Mr. Wintersteller?
Yes.
I think at this point, our representative, student representative, would like to say a few words.
Well, what Kate wants to do is take a picture of the board for the yearbook, I assume, right, Kate?
Yeah.
Okay. And,
can we do that after so we can, don't have to make people watch?
Well, we can, no, we can close the meeting, but I don't want you to leave. We can take it in this area.
Very good. Okay, let me read the Sunshine Law Resolutions. The Open Public Meetings Act, NJSA 1046, allows for the exclusion of the public from that portion of a public meeting when certain matters which might endanger the public interest or risk the deprivation of individual rights are discussed. And the Board of Education wishes to discuss the following matters in a non-public closed meeting with the resulting discussion being made public when a proper conclusion has been reached and there's no longer a need for confidentiality. Number four, pending or anticipated negotiations concerning a collective bargaining agreement with the MEA Association, which I now therefore be resolved, the Manasquan Board of Education will hold a closed executive session immediately. It's anticipated that that closed session will not last longer than 20 minutes, and no action will be taken when we return. May I have a motion to adjourn?
So be it.
Thank you, Mr. Shelton. Second, thank you, Mr. Campbell. Do I need a roll call, or do I just do all in favor?
I think we're done.
No, that's a great one.
Roll call. Roll call.
Mrs.
Yes, move to second. Roll call.
Mrs. Barnes? Mr. Bauer?
Yes.
Mr. Campbell?
Yes.
Mrs. Clayton? Mr. Clayton, I'm sorry. We used to have a Mr. Mrs. DePalma? Ms. LaSala?
Thanks, yes.
Mr. Shelton? Mrs. Verdi?
Yes.
Mrs. Walsh?
Yes.
Mr. Wintersteller?
Yes.
That's perfect.
Oh, that's fine.
I was taking a look.
Do that, you adjourn the meeting.